Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
We're talking about the second in our series. We're looking at what it means to be a co-creator with God. And this is a wonderful thing. It's a very empowering thing because we're made in the image and likeness of God. We have the same source and substance in essence as God. We can act like God, so we can be in co-creation with the great creativity of this universe. And we can't do that from our ego, obviously, because that would be hubris. You know, that's what happens when you lift yourself up in and of your own self. But when you lift yourself up as the Spirit, then you're able to do remarkable things, do amazing things. Last week we talked about to thine own self be true, coming into that alignment with the truth of our being, yeah? And this week we're going to look about how does that translate into our home life, into our family, into our partnerships, into our friends. And then next week we'll look at how do we take it to work. Because if we're going to be creative, we want to be creative in all aspects of our lives, yeah? And then fourthly, if I am a centered spiritual being, I want to be of service in my world. So how do I do that? And that's what we'll look at in the fourth message. So, home life. You know, home life, our families, our friends, our partners, that's the place where it should be all warm and intimate, right? Where everything should be lovely and wonderful and we can share openly. Unfortunately, it doesn't always translate that way, does it? Some of the worst things, some of the worst behaviors that we could possibly exhibit are exhibited with our loved ones. And why is that? Maybe it's because, you know, we know that it's fairly safe there. They're not going to reject us. So we can show our true selves, warts and all. Maybe that's part of it. Part of it is also we get into habits, bad habits sometimes, of wanting to control the situation, control other people, have it a certain way, yeah? So we get the opposite of what we think home should be. And yet we have this desire to, as the song says, make a place a home, make it a place of intimacy. So how do we bridge that gap? Because there's a phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. We've all heard that. And familiar and family, guess what? They come from the same word, the same root, right? So a family and familiar can lead to contempt sometimes because we forget to look at the person fresh, new. Imagine when you're going on that first date. If you could go on the first date, the first week when you're going out with somebody, without the nerves, just with the curiosity, the joy, and you're always on your best behavior, aren't you? You're always putting the best foot forward. You're looking great. You're acting great, you know, and therefore that other person thinks, wow, this is a really, really nice person. And then, of course, as you get more into the relationship, you start to show maybe the other side of you, you know, that it's not all sweetness and light, you know. Maybe you're not dressing up quite as fine. Maybe you're not making sure you don't reveal all those warts that you have, all those personality traits. It's really good to find this all out before the ring goes on, isn't it? Because when we find all these things out afterwards, shock, horror, you know, our relationships can crash and burn. I don't want to go there, but what I want to focus on is those opening weeks where we still have that great regard for that relationship because we're keen on seeing it develop. And we have a certain freshness to it, yes? A certain dignity and respect. And that's what we're talking about regaining, I think, yeah? Falling in love over and over again. I think relationships that are successful reinvent themselves, right? You don't stay stuck in the same way of looking at things. You have to reinvent so that it's a new relationship. It's the same one relationship, but endlessly renewed. I think it's the same with our friends. It's the same with a church community. It has to be endlessly renewed if it's going to be successful. So I've got eight things that I want to throw out there is how to stay creative, how to be a co-creator in our relationships. But before we get there, I want to throw the cat among the pigeons, if you like. I want to throw out three scriptures that are really difficult. They're crazy scriptures, okay? Three crazy scriptures, but exactly Jesus saying them, so we got to deal with it. Because we only want Jesus to say nice things, don't we? We don't like him to say the nasty, difficult things. There's the easy sayings, and then there's the difficult sayings. Well, these are three of the difficult sayings. And we've got to get our head around what is he talking about in relation to co-creating with our families, right? Because it sounds insane, literally insane. The first quote is from the Gospel of Thomas, which is an awesome gospel, by the way. It's 122 verses, really deep wisdom, very unitive. It's almost like unity. It didn't quite make it. It's the best gospel that never quite made it into the Bible. It should have been the fifth gospel, but the councils in the early years, they didn't like it. They got rid of it. But at one point, they were considering bringing it in, you know. But the Gospel of Thomas is full of wisdom, except for this one. It's really difficult. I'm setting it up here, so I don't want you to all be shocked, okay? Jesus said, "Whoever does not hate his father and his mother cannot be a follower of me. And whoever does not hate brothers and sisters will not be worthy of me." Now, I'm going to ask you, what does that mean, okay, in a minute. But I'm going to read the other two scriptures. And it's not just the wacky Gospel of Thomas that says these crazy things. We also get it in two other gospels. We get it in Mark and Luke. And let's see, Mark, it's 3:31 through 35. "Then his mother and his brothers arrived. They stayed outside and sent in a message, asking him to come out to them. A crowd was sitting around him when word was brought that his mother and his brothers were outside asking for him. 'Who are my mother and my brothers?' he replied. And looking round at those who were sitting in the circle about him, he said, 'Here is my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother.'" Again, kind of seems like it's rejecting his own family, yeah? And then finally, Luke 11, 27 to 28. "While he was speaking thus, a woman in the crowd called out, 'Oh, happy the womb that carried you and the breasts that suckled you.' He rejoined, 'No, happy are those who hear the word of God and keep it.'" So, we know that Jesus had a happy family life. You know, it wasn't that he truly rejected his family, because his mom was right there at the end, right? She stuck by him through thick and thin. She was at the cross at the end. We know that he had close relationships with friends. He had the 12 disciples. He had a larger groups. He was very fond of Lazarus and Mary and Martha. And in fact, he wept when Lazarus had died. He brought him back from the dead. So he had relationships. It wasn't about the rejection in the literal sense, yeah? I don't think he's talking about that. He must be talking in symbolic or metaphysical terms, yeah? When he says, you've got to reject mother and father, sister and brother. Well, what? What are we rejecting then? That's the big question. The behavior. What behavior? Okay, so something about going beyond certain ways of looking at our relatives or our loved ones. Exactly. So there's a sense that he's inviting us to what? To expand, you know? Not so much detach from, but expand what it means to be family, what it means to be in love, what it means to be embracing, right? It's not the idea that I got to give up the relationship, but I've got to give up my preconceived ideas about what that role is, yeah, and see it in a new light. If you're successfully bringing up your child, for instance, there's stages and stages of release, aren't they? You know, you're holding them close when they're very young. They need you so much. And then as they grow older, there's a release. I've noticed in my own experience with my daughter, you know, letting her go, letting her, yeah, as if I could possibly do anything else. But that's the controlling mentality, isn't it? I'm going to let you go now. No, she's already gone. I'm getting used to the idea. That's basically what it is. But you know, it used to be that she called every day, and then it was every other day, and then once a week, you know, so on. Because they're not so connected anymore. They move on to other connectedness. And that's important, because that child will never have a rich life if we smother them, yeah? And isn't that what Jesus is saying? You've got to hate the role, the stuckness. You can't be stuck if you're going to live the spiritual life. What's really important is following the will of God and seeing the good, not just in your family, but everywhere. Loyalty to a larger reality. Anything else in those scriptures that strikes you? Yes, exactly. Thank you. We talked about this at 9:30. It's called spiritual bypassing. We do it a lot in Unity sometimes. In other words, we throw an affirmation on something. We've got a problem, just throw a nice affirmation, it'll go away. You know, I behold the Christ in you. I can't stand you, but I behold the Christ in you. Instead of dealing with what you don't like in that person, you know, just to slap an affirmation or to behold the Christ, you know, it's not real. And after a while, it sticks in your craw. You know that's not right, you know. You have to be honest. You have to be real. And to have a real close relationship with someone is to see their good and their bad, isn't it? And to also acknowledge the good and bad inside yourself, you know. It's not all sweetness and light. There's issues that come up, and we have to embrace it all. So again, Jesus is saying, expand into that, you know. Think about how radical it was. I mean, the family is breaking down in modern Western civilization. We're not as family-oriented as we used to be. But 2,000 years ago in the Middle East, and even today in the Middle East, family is incredibly strong. We know this. If somebody kills a member of a family there, then they are hidebound to kill a member of your family that did the deed. You know, there's that sense of loyalty to the family. And so for Jesus to speak in these terms, they'd want to kill him. I mean, they did, but they you know, they wanted to really get him for breaking down these barriers. My goodness, it's almost unthinkable. He's inviting us to totally step outside of our comfort zone, right, and see things in a much more unconditional light here. And he wanted to do it. It was all done with hyperbole, you know, extreme exaggeration, because he wanted us to get the point. He wanted it to impact us deeply, right? Anything else before we get to the 8 points for living the co-creative life? Because I think Jesus is inviting us into this. He's inviting us into letting go of preconceptions around things, right? Because we don't see the truth. We don't see what's really going on from our humanness. So if I get into a bad habit in my relationships, it's probably because I'm not seeing. Right? I'm not allowing something to be present because I'm hidebound. Yeah. Right. I like it. Secrets. You know, we've got a family secret, and we don't tell anybody else about it, right? It's our special little secret, and we're keeping it safe. And that's probably a very toxic way of looking at life, because it means that there's a separation there. I'm hiding something. I'm not being real. And again, Jesus is saying, no, it's all got to come out into the open, right? The things that are hidden will be revealed. It has to be that way if we're going to be healthy. Right, if we're going to move beyond. You can't change something, can you, until you admit there's need for change, right? I can't change anything until I own it. And that's what the radical teachings of Jesus are all about. Let's look at 8 co-creative things we can do. First of all, it's based on what he's just telling us, right? First of all, give up differences. What did Jesus do? He walked into Samaritan villages. You weren't supposed to do that if you were a Jew. He healed Romans as well as Jews, and he healed Gentiles, right? What was he saying in doing that? There's no difference. We're all in this together, right? Gay, straight, young, old, black, white, doesn't matter, right? We're all together. This is the radical statement of Jesus. And if we're into separation thinking, somehow we got it wrong then. We got this message wrong because, you know, his message wasn't about rejecting anybody, was it? It was about embracing all people. So that's the first thing, is give up differences. Give up, you know, it's great to see all the variety of life. It's not, we don't iron it all out, but we don't say one is good and the other is bad, right? It is part of the multiplicity and oneness of our life experience. We're going to have differences, aren't we? We're going to have different opinions, right? But none of those differences are grounds for creating separation or barriers. That's what he's saying. Yeah. Embrace being different. You know, loyalty is an interesting thing. You know, we say I must be loyal to my country, my family, whatever. And yet it's so easy to swap loyalty. Somebody was sharing that, you know, somebody was a big fan of a certain team up in New England, and then they came down here and it's Cowboys, go Cowboys. And so, you know, we swapped the loyalties immediately that he moved to this part of the world. And I think the same way for my team in the World Cup. It didn't go anywhere, folks, England. They were pathetic. And I want to be loyal to them. So now I've got to find another team that I can get behind. Okay, I'm going with Germany. Let's do that. And so, I'm still not quite as loyal to Germany as I would be to England. But, I want them to win now. So it's easy how we could shift loyalties. It's not undoable. You know, it's not undoable to move beyond patterns that no longer serve us. That's the first thing. Acknowledge differences, I guess. But give up the fact that that's what makes me special, right? No, it doesn't. The spirit in you makes you remarkable, nothing else. And I find I used to be special when I was younger. Very, very special. Nobody was quite like me, and I was unique. You know, I was unbelievable. And then over the years, I realized, you ain't so special, Paul. And in that, I found my rightful place, right? Because then I could be truly me. But when you think you have to be special, you've limited yourself, and you can't be a co-creator, right? And of course, I blame my mother because she smothered me and all that, you know? It was her fault. I would have been fine if she hadn't been smothering me. That's right. Then I realized, no, it had nothing to do with her. She was doing the best she could, and she gave me some wonderful gifts as well. So it's all for good. But we have to let go of that idea of special. Number two, and this links in to moving beyond clan and tribe loyalty. You know, yeah, I can support Germany. It's okay, you know, even though I hated them in the Second World War and all that stuff. If we're going to follow Jesus, it took us 2,000 years to even get the idea that there was something greater than clans and tribes, right? We're still living a tribal consciousness, basically, and it's really hard to move beyond it. We see it played out in our political system and rejection of certain people, you know, because our tribe doesn't want your tribe over here. And yet this country was based on the idea that we're all immigrants, basically, yes? There were a few that were around, but most of us sitting here today came in from somewhere else. And that was a good thing then. So inherently, I still think it's a good thing that we all mix it up together and there's no clan or tribe that keeps everything separate. What did Jesus say? The kingdom of heaven is within you and it's among you. And there was no, well, the kingdom of heaven ends here and everybody over there is not in it. That doesn't make sense, does it? We're all in it. Okay, three. Endeavor to see others as if for the first time. It's that going on the first date again, you know? We're seeing somebody for the first time. When familiarity breeds contempt, we don't even look at somebody. You know, we think we know them so well, we just glaze. We see a vague resemblance of them, we're not really looking. And sometimes it can be very, very profound to actually look at someone and look in their eyes and see them, yeah? Because then we're endeavoring to see them, hopefully, for the first time, right? And we discover amazing things. Because before we've been sort of making our minds up about them, and now we choose to look anew, afresh. It's a good exercise, I think, to do at least once a week, once a day maybe, is to look at somebody, a loved one, you know, that you're so familiar with, you forget to look. And it's not just looking, it's being with, isn't it? It's actually being in the company of. Was it Emerson, I think, who visited Carlyle, Thomas Carlyle, the great philosopher? Emerson was young at the time. He was visiting the great old man. And before Emerson wrote all his wonderful transcendental essays and stuff, and he went to see him, and they sat down together in the parlor in front of the fire for a conversation. And they sat there and looked at each other for a whole hour without speaking. And then they both stood up and shook hands, and they said, "Wow, what a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much." They hadn't even spoken, but they'd communed. So they'd looked at each other. They saw intuitively who they were, and they had a wonderful conversation at a very different level. That's what we're talking about there. And four is communicate not from our roles and our egos, but from the truth of us, right? Because I'm not just a dad, right? I'm not just a husband. Neither are you a wife or a child or whatever the role is. That's part of who we are, but we were much more than these things. And as I say, just as I've had to let my daughter release into something wonderful, so I see her in a totally new light now. Now she's a mom herself. That's one of the greatest joys I've ever experienced, I think, is seeing your own child now as a mother and seeing her do all the things you did with her when she was a baby. And notice how life continues, you know, and allowing that. You know what? They do a very good job. I'm amazed. They don't need to be controlled or, you know, told how to do it. They know how to do it. And I think this is so true in general. If we trust, if we allow, then we notice that, yes, it works very, very well. You know? I'm very optimistic about the world because I see young people and I see how intelligent and wise they are, and I feel it's all going to be okay. You know, in fact, they may do better than some of us tried to do in our great days. So here's two of them right there. You know, people are filled with good energy and light. And I can trust that. That's awesome. So, allowing my own mind to be free, isn't that what it's about? Without preconceived ideas about my relationships. Five, imagine that you could be wrong. How about that one? I know that's shock horror. We don't want to do that. Imagine you could be wrong, because the bottom line is we don't see the whole picture, do we, ever? So in some sense, we are wrong, right? Our humanness never knows. And how do you know when you're really wrong? When you think you know it completely, when you think you're absolutely right about something. I've proved this to myself many times. When I think I have absolute, 100% solid lockdown, I understand this one. And then later on, it's explained to me how I got it so wrong. Then I realize I don't need to be believing all the stuff that's going on in my body-mind system here. I need to open to spirit, right? And admit that I could be wrong about this. Forgiveness can come when we can do this. If we can't admit that we could be wrong, we can never forgive. Yeah? I know people, and you know people, and maybe there's parts in us that are still holding on to something that happened 10, 15, 50 years ago, yeah? Because we can't let that one go. I've got an idea about it, and I'm sticking with it. What were you saying? 70 years, there we go. Everything seems to be sweetness and light over there today. That's good, because I thought you were all going to get into a fist fight last week. But it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I feel that I can see the aura there. I can see the aura. How could you be so lost for so long? But you've been having a great journey, though, wandering around lost, you know. There is no path, folks. You know, we talk about I'm on the spiritual path. The most profound thing is the path doesn't exist. You know, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but in the sense that it's not just a path, you know, it's wherever you are is God's totality. So therefore, even if you think you're lost, you're still on the path. You're still in God's totality, and that's the beautiful thing. It's just hard, though, because we like to have things worked out, don't we? We have to come to conclusions on everything. I want a path. You know, what's that ad where that rolls out, and then they go follow it, and all's well for the rest of eternity because you bought this particular product, you know? And it just leads you. That's the way we like life. You know, I want to, it's all the path to be laid out, the red carpet. But it doesn't work like that. And if it did, it would be sad, you know, because then we'd be locked into roles again. 6, take your rightful place and let others take their rightful place. Now, that's a huge one, and that's worthy of contemplation. What is my rightful place, right? Because we can say what it is, like I'm magnificent, I deserve everything, it's the Father's good pleasure to give me the kingdom, so therefore my rightful place is peace, love, and joy. But do you really own it? Is that really true for you? Is that your rightful place? Because if it is, that's wonderful, but it can't be just an idea, it has to be, yeah, I feel this. This is my rightful place. Jesus had some advice. He says, when you go to a banquet, don't sit at the high table, the highest seat, because the boss might come, the master, the host might come and tell you to move down. Rather, sit at the lowest seat, and then when he sees you down there, he'll say, hey, come on up, because those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those that humble themselves will be exalted. So I think this is the key here to taking your rightful place. It's a willingness to be present wherever you are, right? Even the lowest seat. Because if you feel, no, I deserve to be at the best and top table, sometimes you'll be humbled. It's better to be open and receptive to whatever comes. And then Spirit tends to exalt us from that. I've noticed that in my life. You know, the more surefired, deeply entrenched in my position, the more I get hacked about. But the more open-minded and harmless, then the more the good flows. Yeah? Interesting. So take your rightful place. Contemplate that this week. Take that with you. What is my rightful place? What is my rightful place in this family? Right? What is my rightful place in my relationship with my partner or with God? It's a fascinating question. I'm interested to see what will come up. 7, laugh and have fun with people, not at people's expense, right? That's the key there. And it's so difficult to do that because we love to see the faults in everybody else except for ourselves. But it's wonderful to laugh with each other. And we like to laugh a lot in unity, don't we? Because that's the way to free ourselves. It's buoyant. It's energizing. It's wondrous. And then finally, and maybe this is the most important one, and it's what meditation is all about, and that is just stop. Don't do anything. Be present. Right? Coming back to an earlier one about looking at the person as if for the first time, let me close by reading the Pablo Neruda poem in this regard. He invites us into this. Because, man, we're so busy, aren't we? We don't stop for a minute, right? Isn't this nice to spend this whole hour here just basically imbibing, being, getting filled, yeah? It's a good thing. Because we don't take enough time to do that often. We're rushing from one activity to the next. And it's really salutary. It's really healthy to just be present to this moment. And it's called Keeping Quiet by that great poet from Chile, Pablo Neruda. He says, and now we will count to 12, and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for a second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would not look at his hurt hands. Those who prepare green wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victory with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it's about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now, I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. Amen.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.